Welcome, welcome, geeks and nerds, girls and boys, to a brand new edition of Geek to Me Radio. Tonight, we have showbiz veteran Shelly Herman talking about her book, My Peacock Tale, Secrets of an NBC Page. Later on, we'll have comedian Howie Hirschfield on talking about a brand new improv show that you can see right across the hall here at the Westport Playhouse. All that and more, stand by.
We're talking TV, comics and movies, and video games.
Driving around the greater St. Louis area tonight, listening to us on the big 550 KTRS. Hello to all of you. Thank you very much for tuning in. If you are streaming us via the KTRS app or out there in the world on the website, hello to all of you. And of course, if you're watching us on YouTube and Facebook, hello, and thank you very much for finding us there. I just had something pop up. A friend of mine said, hey, are you doing your live show tonight? I said, yes, I am. He said, well, I didn't get the thing. You've got to actually subscribe to us on YouTube. Then you'll get the little notification pop up every time we go live. So if you haven't already subscribed to Geek to Me Radio on YouTube, like my friend who shall remain nameless, then make sure you hit that subscribe button, hit the little bell notification. That way, every time we go live on YouTube, you will get the notification. And of course, if you're hearing us after the fact in the podcast form on whatever platform you're getting your podcasts, we do appreciate you subscribing there and listening to this at your leisure every week. A full show tonight. I'm very excited for my first guest. Author Shelly Herman is a Emmy-nominated showbiz veteran, longtime host, writer, producer, and personality with decades of success on both sides of the camera. Brand new book she's got out, My Peacock Tale, Secrets of an NBC Page. So excited to talk to her. Shelly, how are you?
I am so excited to talk to you. After hearing that introduction, this sounds like the show I've been waiting for.
Well, let's hope so. Now that's a lot to live up to. Now I'm afraid I'm going to disappoint you.
No, you won't. No, we're going to have fun.
Absolutely. When I think of that time, I know my mom and dad had the VHS tapes of the Dean Martin celebrity roasts. And when I think of that era of Hollywood that you're talking about in your book, that's kind of the area that always kind of springs to mind. And when you've got the names that you've listed, the people who you discuss in your book, your interactions with people like Andy Kaufman, Richard Pryor, Freddie Prinze, Gilda Radner, Robin Williams, Betty White, and so many more, that's kind of that's the era that I'm thinking of. So it's almost like a second golden age of Hollywood, if I were to describe it.
Well, Brandon Tartikoff, who for a time was president of the NBC network, titled his book The Last Great Ride. Mm. And I think my friends and I got there just as the last of that wonderful era was still taking place at NBC Burbank.
And so you started out as a page, and if I'm not mistaken, one of the things I was looking at, you kind of got this role after going to an Elvis concert. Did I get that right?
Yes, I have Elvis to thank for my success. What happened was there was a bunch of us girls that were working at Sears in the San Fernando Valley area, and it turns out one of the girls' dads used to repair Elvis's TVs, which I imagine that was a full-time job with him shooting out TV screens all the time. So she was kind of a shy wallflower kind of girl and just said, do you want to go see Elvis in Vegas? My dad can get us tickets. So it was like, boy, howdy, yeah. So we piled in a couple cars, drove to Vegas, about a five-hour drive from L.A., saw Elvis. And if your listeners saw Austin Butler's portrayal of Elvis,
yeah,
at the Hilton, it was exactly like that.
Huh.
I was 20 at the time, so I was even kind of sneaking in to see him. And the women were bringing squash blossom necklaces and flowers and things that they had made and laying it at the foot of the stage. And he would be wearing a scarf and he would kind of pat himself down a little bit from the sweat. And then the ladies would pull the scarf off of his neck. And I had always been like a Beatles girl, and I wasn't like so really into Elvis that much. But man, after that night, I just came away with like such huge respect and admiration for him. So after the concert, three of the girls took off to go have a really good time in Vegas. And I was stuck with the girl who was the wallflower who got us the tickets. And I thought it was kind of, you know, mean of them to ditch her. So we sat in the coffee shop at the Hilton and had cherry pie and ice cream and, you know, talked about our hopes and dreams. And I had told her that when I was in high school, I got to go to a taping of the Midnight Special, which was like a rock concert show that they did at NBC. And I saw these people standing around in these ugly polyester uniforms who got to listen to rock and roll music on the job and get paid for it. Hmm. You know, something I thought, well, I'd like to do that.
Right.
And when I told her that that was the job I'd like to have, she said, well, my mom's friend works at NBC. Let me see what I can do. And 2 weeks later, I had the job.
So when I think of an NBC page, obviously things are, you know, several years removed from when you did it. And I'm picture, you know, Kenneth on Third Rock. Yeah, 30 Rock. I get Third Rock and 30 Rock confused. So 30 Rock with Tina Fey as, you know, just they're in their little blazers and everything like that. But it encompasses quite a bit of a different feel from when you did it. Talk a little bit. Tell people who might not be familiar what your duties as an NBC page entailed then.
Well, the NBC Page program, which is celebrating its 90th anniversary this year, is kind of an entry-level position for what they like to term it as an executive training program. Now, with that said, people like Regis Philbin came out of the Page program, Chuck Barris, Gene Rayburn, you know, Grant Tinker. There's some executives that were there, too. Notice I'm mentioning a bunch of men names while I'm saying this, because it wasn't until many years later that, women were included in this program. And when they were first included, they were just giving tours of either NBC Burbank or 30 Rock. And eventually the girls were allowed to start ushering the TV shows the same way that the men were. And then the duties kind of expanded where within the 18 months that you're in this executive training program, you're supposed to make contacts while you're there to try to get your next job off of the Page staff. Right now you have to have a college degree. I didn't at the time. I do now. And, you have to, if someone's interested in the job, which is like the best entry-level job in the world, I gotta say, you can go online at NBC, fill out an application. They also ask that you do a 2-minute video so they can see if you could be like one of the perkiest pages they could hire. Send in a resume, send in your CV. And then if they want to interview you in person, which I think this part is really cool, NBC will fly you out to either Burbank or New York. And all expense paid so that they can meet you in person. And I guess it's better if I say it this way. The chances of getting into Harvard are easier than becoming an NBC page.
Really?
Yeah.
I know we've got some people who are listening here in the chats. Chance Bartels, who actually runs a great podcast called The Nostalgic Pod Blast out of Atlanta. He's jumping a little ahead because I was going to get to this, but he wanted to know if you had worked on any NBC game shows. And I know you've had some experience there, so why don't we go ahead and answer that question for Chance?
Well, Chance, thank you for asking. I don't know if you happened to see, there was a documentary that was on in May. It was on ABC, and it's running on Hulu now. It was called The Game Show Show, and I was one of the talking heads on that. And yes, my background is primarily game shows. In 1972 and 73, I was a contestant on The Dating Game. And the first man that I won on the show, we went to San Diego. It was a lovely little, you know, trip. But the second one, I did the nighttime version of Dating Game, and we got to go to the Bahamas.
Ooh.
And when I met the guy, I gave him a big hug after, you know, he walked around the little, you know, private area there. And they go, "You want a trip to the Bahamas?" And I whispered in his ear, "Where are the Bahamas?" I had no idea. But yes, I worked on a lot of game shows. I worked as an intern on the game show that was called Liars Club that Alan Ludden hosted.
Oh.
And I had known Betty White through that too. And there's a picture in my Peacock tale of Betty White's mom, Tess, and me sitting together. And it was so sweet because when Betty would do the show, she'd bring her mom to the studio, but before they arrived, they would go get their hair done the same way at the Elizabeth Arden Salon in Beverly Hills, and they'd get their nails manicured, and they'd wear the same color polish. And it's just so wonderful to think, like, you know, here's a woman taking her mom to her job, and she's seeing her son-in-law on the job, too.
Yeah.
And I want to, I'm going to throw in a little plug here. One of the things that I get to do is help friends of mine curate game show items for a museum that is opening a special wing that's going to be the National, it's at the Strong National Museum of Play, and it's going to be the Game Show History Archive.
Oh, neat.
And because of my relationship that I had with Betty, when she passed away, I reached out to her estate and talked to her assistant. And I said, "Listen, I know you'll probably be auctioning a lot of Betty's items, but when you get to the game show stuff and you think nobody's going to care about it, I do. And can we have any papers or pictures or memorabilia?" Well, not only did she send over a bunch of items, but she also asked if we wanted one of Betty's Emmys to put on display at the museum.
Oh, how amazing.
Yeah. No, but I worked on the Gong Show. I worked on a whole bunch of them. And I still work on game shows when they let me. It's fun. It's a great job. I could go into more detail if you need me to.
No, one of the game shows from that era, I'm not sure if you would have worked on this one, that I distinctly remember as a little kid watching was Joker's Wild. And for some reason, I was obsessed with that show. Did you ever get to work on that at all?
I attended tapings of it because that wasn't done where we were. But it's so funny because of all the random shows to select, again, curating items for the museum, friend of a friend reached out to me and said that her friend in Las Vegas had the handle in the bonus round that you would pull, like a slot machine handle.
Yeah.
And she said, do you want that for the museum? And they went crazy for it.
Yeah, that was, I don't know what it was, but it always fascinated me because they'd pull that big lever that you just mentioned and the three wheels on the screen would start to turn around. And I was always worried to get the devil face that was up there. That was always one that freaked me out as a kid, but I continued to watch each week because I'm weird. For those of you who just might be joining us, we're talking with Shelley Herman about her new book, My Peacock Tale, Secrets of an NBC Page. Are you okay to stick with me through a quick commercial break?
Absolutely.
Perfect. If you are listening, we're going to put up a link to where you can find more information about Shelley and the book in the show notes. If you're listening after the fact, scroll down to the bottom of the page. We'll tell you more about that, too, in the coming segment. Right now, you're listening to Geek to Me Radio on the Big 550 KTRS. Please stand by.
Holy cool listening. Hi, this is Burt Ward, Robin the Boy Wonder from the TV series Batman. You're listening to Geek to Me. Golly gee willikers, it's fantastic.
We are back. Geek to Me Radio, heard here on the Big 550 every Sunday night. I'm your host, James Enstall. I want to make sure we tell you about our official comic book sponsor, Bugs Comics and Games. Whether you're a fan of the 1960s Batman series, or whether or not Michael Keaton from 1989 is your guy, or you like Robert Pattinson in The Batman, if you're a Batman fan, period, and you want to get some Batman comics, you want jumping on point, Silver Age, Bronze Age, Copper Age, go see Larry at Bugs Comics and Games. Not only does he have Batman comics, he's got Superman comics, Green Lantern comics, X-Men comics, everything you can want. Spider-Man's his guy. I'm always more of a Batman person. But whatever kind of comic you might be wanting, Larry has it out there. Independent titles from Image, Valiant, and more. Dark Horse, all the comics. A lot of big names got recognized at the Eisner Awards, as Joey V and I were talking about in San Diego this past weekend. So if you want to go pick up some of those Eisner-winning titles, you can go ask Larry, hey, I'm looking for this title by this writer, or I want something by this artist. Larry will give you the exact item you're looking for. It's like having your own personal comic concierge. I was just out there getting my Golden Age boards that I cut down so they'll fit in the Silver Age bags because my OCD won't allow that little bit of sliding around, so I have to make them fit perfectly. Larry laughs, but he still orders them for me, which is really nice. Go out there and check him out. Tell him you heard about it on Geek to Me Radio, and of course, give the Facebook page a like, Bugs, Comics, and Games on Facebook. Whether you're wanting to buy, whether you're wanting to sell a collection, or you're just wanting to get back into comics, maybe you haven't done it for a while and you want to kind of see what's out there, what's new, Larry's got something for everybody. Young kids, middle-aged kids, kids at heart, old kids, it doesn't matter. Check them out. Bugs, Comics, and Games right there on Bryan Road in O'Fallon, Missouri. Make sure you tell them you heard about it on Geek to Me Radio, the official comic sponsor for our show, Bugs, Comics, and Games. Talking with Shelley Herman about her new book, My Peacock Tale, Secrets of an NBC Page. We talked about the game show era with Shelley before we took that commercial break, and we had Bill Cleveland, our friend who is a travel writer. Bill was listening, and Bill said, the Strong Museum of Play in Rochester, that's one of his very favorite museums. The place is awesome, so I don't know if he's been there since you've brought all the game show stuff in or not, Shelley, but that might cause him to go revisit his favorite museum.
Well, our exhibit goes up in 2025.
Okay.
So presently it's just Betty's Emmy that's on display saying coming soon. Now, to tie into your spot that you just had there, in my book, My Peacock Tale, I have a handwritten letter from the iconic Batman, Adam West.
Yes.
He, and dovetailing back to the game show thing, I was one of his lifelines on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire.
Really?
And he wrote a very charming thank you note. And it's really funny because Adam is, I mean, people might think he's a little spacey sometimes and a little goofy. He is sly as a fox. I got to tell you that. Because when they used to do Millionaire, they would have what they would call fastest finger. And whoever would buzz in the fastest got a chance to go up on stage to talk to Regis and, you know, try to answer questions. Well, Adam figured, why should I go up right away? Because every day that he's on, he gets paid because he's an actor and he gets a certain salary.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So he waited till the last minute before he got on. And to his credit, he won $250,000 and donated it to a library in Idaho where he lived.
Very nice. That's awesome. I love little stories like that. These things you don't usually hear when you hear about a celebrity. The little things like that are really cool. And Jim Davis from Chicago is checking in the chats. Jim, great to see you tonight. Thanks for tuning in and listening. All these celebrities encounters you mentioned in the book, Shelley, Johnny Carson, I mean, hands down to this day, the king of talk shows. I mean, I don't think anyone really comes close. I love Conan O'Brien dearly. I remember watching him, his first show when he started. But boy, Johnny Carson, I still think is the gold standard. Talk a little bit about some of your experiences either with The Tonight Show or with Johnny Carson and that era.
Wow. So many wonderful stories. I guess I'll start off with, a lot of people would think Johnny would work just an hour or in the old days, 90 minutes a night. But Johnny would get up at the crack of dawn, read newspapers, call over to the studio and say to the writers, hey, this might make an interesting joke. Why don't we talk about, you know, Nancy Reagan has a psychic or air traffic controllers or, you know, whatever was in the news at that point. He would then... And he would write jokes, too. And then he would drive in from his home in Malibu, which was maybe about an hour's drive. And no limo. He just drove himself, which, you know, Ed McMahon arrived in a limo. Johnny drove himself.
Right.
And we would just so happen to have the tours standing around when Johnny would get out of his car. Usually it was a Corvette when I was there. He later had, like, a DeLorean that he would drive.
Oh, wow.
Usually Johnny would say something to the crowd like, you know, the tour is a ripoff, get your money back, you know, it would just make everybody's day. And then he'd go up to his office, all of the jokes would be presented to him, and he would lay them out, which he wanted to do. And there's a picture in My Peacock Tale of what his cue cards look like. The jokes weren't written verbatim. It was just kind of bullet points. so that Johnny could kind of ad-lib his way around a joke.
Okay.
And it worked really well that way. So no teleprompter, no, you know, like Bob Hope used cue cards, or, you know, he would say every single thing on the cue card. He wouldn't ad-lib at all. And then Johnny would, and it's funny because Johnny used to have an office and it had a window overlooking 3000 West Alameda. And at a certain point, that window was controversial because Red Fox, who was starring in Sanford and Son at the time, he wanted a window as big as Johnny's in his office. And that kind of hung things up for a while because, you know, Red had a couple sick days until he got a window.
Oh.
But at a certain point, it became detrimental for Johnny to have that window because it was a security risk. So they kicked the pages out of the page lounge downstairs and built a subterranean office, as we refer to it. But what a lot of people didn't know is there was a secret tunnel that was connected to that office space for Johnny. And they had it as an escape room in case there was any security issues. But also on the very last night when Johnny bid everyone a good night for the last time, they took him down to his office, and rather than going out to see everybody waiting to say goodbye to him and, you know, whatever they were going to do, he and his wife snuck through the little tunnel, went underneath the parking area, up through the administration building, and were taken to a helicopter waiting in the parking lot, where he flew to his home in Malibu. Invitation-only party, Les Brown and the Band of Renown played, and there went Johnny.
Wow. Man, it's just one of those eras that, you know, that's, I don't want to call it a bygone era because it doesn't seem like it was that long ago. But then someone brings up something from 1990, I'm like, oh yeah, that was just about 5 or 10 years ago. So it's all kind of odd how time passes.
Well, what's odd is I went to Barnes & Noble today because I'm doing a book signing there at the Grove in a few days. And the girl was, oh, what a pretty cover. Who's that man?
Oh my gosh. You're kidding. You're kidding.
No, and that's what's kind of scary, too, because even as I encounter people here in Los Angeles, some of the youngins, they think Jimmy Fallon is the only host of The Tonight Show. They don't even, they skip over Jay.
I was going to say, they don't remember Jay Leno. That wasn't even that long ago.
I know, and you talked about your love of Conan. You know, Conan sure got the wrong end of the stick on that deal.
Yeah, oh my gosh. We could be on that for a whole hour talking about what happened with Conan and Jay back then. And even then, that was, you know, what, at least 12, 15 years ago already? It doesn't seem like it was, you know, that long ago.
I know, but the hurt is still there. That was, you know, talk about a bunch of knuckleheads trying to run a network. That just wasn't right.
It's so interesting because I assume as a page, you know, you got to see some of the inner workings and how things were done. You've got all these great behind-the-scenes stories, interactions with guests. And you mentioned the late, great Red Fox, brilliant comedic mind. And there's a story in your book about how you had to knock on his door because you needed him to help you get Frank Sinatra. Am I getting the story kind of right?
Yeah. You know, as pages, we're supposed to remain very professional at all times. You know, we are the ambassadors for NBC with the public. Well, there was a very elderly woman, Sadie O'Sullivan, who would come to the taping of Sanford and Son every week, and Red looked to her as being his good luck charm. And you know, occasionally he would slip her a couple $100. You know, he's really sweet that way with her. So one night, Sadie comes to the studio, and she says, what's all the commotion next door? And I said, oh, well, Frank Sinatra's taping The Tonight Show. And she says, well, you know, Frank bailed me out of jail once. And I said, So she proceeds to tell me a story about there was a meeting of the American Nazi Party at the Sportsman's Lodge, a hotel that was across from her apartment. And she just didn't like that at all. And went over to the luncheon and hit a Nazi with her purse.
Wow.
And was promptly arrested. And while she was being booked and everything, somebody came over to her and said, Sadie, bail's been posted. You're out. You're free. And she says, nobody knows I'm here. Who knows I'm here? And a telegram came in, and it said, way to go, Sadie. Love, Francis Albert.
Ah, how cool is that?
So she said, I never got to thank Frank for bailing me out of jail. So, you know, me being, you know, who I am, I'm not shy, as you've probably gathered. I knocked on Red Fox's dressing room door, and I was the last person he expected to see, I'm sure. And I said to him, "Do you know Frank Sinatra?" And he went, "Yeah." And I said, "Do you like him?" He said, "Yeah." So I told him the Sadie story. He held up taping of Sanford and Son and took Sadie over to meet Frank so she could thank him.
How cool is that? Wow.
Yeah.
And did Frank remember? Was it a good, were you privy to them being able to chat?
They had a moment, and I asked Sadie if she got Frank's autograph, and she says, no, Red had to go back to do his show. I didn't want to take up any more time for that. So she didn't get Frank's autograph or anything, but she was able to thank her hero.
But she's got the telegram, too, and a great story on top of it.
Yeah, there you go.
Wow. Again, the book is My Peacock Tale, Secrets of NBC Page. We're talking with the author, Shelley Herman, all about the book. I wanted to ask, one of the things I had highlighted in the notes that I had taken for this was there was the talk of the bad behavior and heartbreak incidents that you had. Accounts of a torrid affair with a handsome actor that you changed the name so it doesn't hurt the people who knew him. But some of the stuff you talk about, it's
I don't mind hurting him.
I changed the name in the book.
I didn't want the wife and the kids to get the shrapnel because of him. That's why the name's changed.
But just when you think of that, Aaron, I'm sure there must have been several incidents of that happening, and then you look at juxtapose that with today's Me Too movement, it's just like night and day, and yet we're only, you know, four decades out, I guess. But it's interesting to think about the juxtaposition of how so many, there are just safeguards in place and things like that that wouldn't allow that to happen. But as you kind of mentioned in the book, it was just the era.
Well, and I was really disappointed in one instance. There was an executive at NBC who was looking for someone to work with him in a lower management position. And he happened to be dating a friend of mine. And I said to her, "Do you mind if I go interview for the job? Do you want the job?" And she goes, "Oh, no, heavens no, go interview for it." And he basically said that if I would sleep with him, I'd get the job. And I was so upset. And I went back to this girl and I said, "Listen, this is what he said to me." And she looked at me and she went, "Uh-huh." She never talked to me again.
Oh, my goodness.
And she had moved in with him, and they stayed together for about 2 more years.
Mm.
So much for the girl code, you know?
No
I really
kidding.
Thought I was doing the right thing in that instance, you know? And then the other one is, I didn't know the guy was married. I mean, he wasn't wearing a ring,
right,
and he came on to me. I thought it was okay to go for it, you know?
I'm sure stuff like that, obviously, people's behavior is bad from decade to decade and across the centuries, but you'd kind of hope it's gotten better these days, but when the stories come out, like we mentioned, the Me Too movement, not so much. Maybe the behavior still hasn't improved any great extent, but the detail you talk about, Elise, it's fascinating, and I know you collaborated with several of your fellow pages from back in that time. What about, did you guys always keep in touch, or was this kind of a thing, like you mentioned, during COVID, you reached out, you still had some contacts? How did that all come about?
There are a core group of us, men and women, that have stayed friends over 40 years.
Hmm.
And we celebrate each other's birthdays. We watch the award shows together. We travel together. We've been to our parents' funerals. You know, we're a really, really tight group of people. And we've heard each other's stories over the years. And now our spouses, we actually call them page in-laws.
Ah.
And then there's people that we call the page adjacents who used to date the pages, but don't date any of them, but we still like them, so they still hang around us.
Okay.
So they've all heard these stories. So when the pandemic hit and Zoom was possible, we were able to reach out to some of our friends who had moved out of California. And it was interesting, especially in the case of the Freddie Prinze chapter in the book, because one of the women I worked with had this very pristine story about Freddie Prinze, who starred on the show Chico and the Man, and sadly committed suicide at a very young age. And then there's another girl who had another side of the story that's very dark side of the story. So the two of them had never chatted before, and it really helped to get them together at a certain point so that they could still try to figure out, you know, because both of them felt like, what could I have done to help him? What could I do to save him? And in the book, you'll see that Freddie sadly had a lot of problems before he became famous, and it just was manifested by doctors who overprescribed. And also, it's one of the few instances where the estate of Freddie Prinze sued the doctors and won because of the way he was prescribed his medication.
And again, if you're just now listening, Shelley Herman is the author of My Peacock Tales, Secrets of MDC Page. One of our listeners, we mentioned Chance from Atlanta, says, Shelley, please come to Atlanta to the Barnes & Noble across from the Cumberland Mall in Cobb County. They'd love to have you do a signing there. Are you currently just sticking to California? Are you doing a national tour? Have you already done the national tour?
I'm available for weddings, bar mitzvahs, and book signings. And I love Atlanta, so I would love to go there. If I could get there, I would absolutely love to. And you know what? While we're talking about great cities, I love St. Louis.
Oh, St. Louis is wonderful. Born and raised.
I've been there many times because my husband, who is an actor by the name of Randall Carver, he was on the very first season of Taxi. He played John Burns, kind of the, you know, country bumpkinish kind of guy. But he is a graduate of Missouri Military Academy in Mexico, Missouri. So we have been through St. Louis many times. Love the Cracker Barrel, by the way.
We have several of them to choose from now. There's plenty to have you, if you want to come back out, there's one in every county.
And I did a show with a local boy there by the name of Brett Kepner. And Brett and I, for about a year and a half, co-hosted Battle of the Monster Trucks and Mudbox Spectacular for ESPN. And Brett is a fabulous broadcaster. He's so knowledgeable. He still to this day does like drag races and different car rallies and things like that. He's a very, very smart man, and I just look good in a red jumpsuit.
That'd be another thing if you were to come to St. Louis. If someone's listening right now, like we've got, we mentioned Jim in Chicago, and we got Chance in Atlanta. If someone does want to book the tour to come through, is there? If you don't want to give it out over the air, I'll get it from you off the air. But is there a website people should reach out to you through if they want to get that information?
Well, what a coincidence! I happen to have a website named My Peacock Tale, spelled T-A-L-E, MyPeacockTale.com.
Perfect. MyPeacockTale.com. And so Chance and Jim in Chicago, there, if you're interested, you could reach out and make arrangements to have the tour come through your city or wherever you might be listening from. I know we get people from all over the country listening to the show via the web and on our YouTube and Facebook pages. I wanted to mention one of the stories you had in there about Gilda Radner. Because, again, just one of those, when she passed away, I know that was a huge loss to everyone who knew her. Again, a great, brilliant comedian. Talk a little bit about that story, if you could.
Well, this was a story that came from several of the pages. I, unfortunately, did not witness this, but I wish I had. When one of the jobs that pages are assigned to is to pick celebrities up in a limousine at the airport and bring them to their destination. And in this case, it was a press tour that was being done at the Sheraton Universal Hotel at Universal Studios. So Gilda, she was like the number one star at NBC at the time. And she finished the rounds of the press tour pretty quickly. And she turned to my friend Pete and said, I have 4 hours until I need to meet my plane. I've never been to Hollywood before. Show me Hollywood. So Pete and Linda and Melissa all piled in his Mustang, and they went to the Chinese Theater, and she put her handprints in the, you know, with all the famous people in the footprints. They went and had Stan's Donuts in Westwood, which was a big deal at the time. She was engaged to a guy, and she wanted to go by and meet the guy's parents out in the Fairfax area. And as they were leaving, Pete noticed that the fuel tank was kind of low, and sure enough, right in front of CBS, they ran out of gas.
Oh my goodness.
So Pete, being the gentleman that he is, sat in the driver's seat steering the car while he had Gilda, Linda, and Melissa pushing him to a gas station. And fortunately, they made the flight. And just when Pete didn't think he'd hear anything more about it, Gilda sent him a hysterical thank you note, which is in the book, My Peacock Tale. And you can see her pretty little handwriting, and it's signed Love, Gilda. And then for any of your listeners who are thinking of writing a book someday, even though Pete got this letter from Gilda, legally, he doesn't own that letter. It's actually still owned by Gilda's estate.
Really?
So I wanted to use this letter desperately. So thanks to Facebook, I reached out to somebody that I knew had been a friend of Gilda's. And within 10 minutes, he gave me the name of Gilda Radner's brother. And I had a release that I could use the letter in the book.
Wow. That's interesting. The letter was still Gilda's property, but the telegram from Sadie, that belonged to Sadie.
Yes, I didn't reprint Sadie's telegram.
Oh, okay.
So that's the difference there.
Ah.
I mean, it's also if you look on the front cover of My Peacock Tale, there's a photo of Johnny Carson and me, and I'm giving out envelopes when he's doing Stump the Band. Now, technically, even if he's just signed the picture, he owns the picture still. But
really?
By signing it personally to me, it then becomes a gift. Oh my gosh. Law school. I go to law school before you write a book.
No,
that's
no
all
kidding.
I can say.
Wow, that's insane. So because it was personalized to you, then it's a gift and it's yours.
And also because it's used for press and promotional purposes. But I still reached out and I to the Johnny Carson estate, and his nephew now runs the estate, and the nephew's son. And I got permission to use it. They were very generous with allowing me to have that for the cover.
I would think in a book like this, that's kind of highlighting a lot of these great celebrity interactions, that most people with their estates would be okay with. Yes, please. We'd love to have this story out there. Did you encounter, you don't have to name names, but did you encounter any estates that were kind of reticent about letting you use the materials?
Nobody. But had I reached out to the McLean Stevenson estate, there might have been a problem.
Okay.
That was one of the Me Too people.
Right.
And even though it's a hugely hysterical story, I have to start off with that, because I thought I was doing everything the right way, and it turned bad real fast.
Mm.
But it was still funny. And I got out of the situation, and I think every person, and I'm going to say, you know, man and woman, because a lot of the male pages were hit on by male stars as well.
Sure.
I think it's something that everybody should know about when they're first starting out in their career, and how you it's seemingly you're doing your job and you're being professional, but that's not the way somebody who's a predator looks at you.
Right. And again, if you're interested, the book, My Peacock Tale, Secrets of an NBC Page by Shelley Herman. Obviously, the website you gave out earlier, if people want to look at the book, buy the book, or get a tour of you coming through their town, is mypeacocktale.com. Are you active on social media? If people want to keep up with you personally, can people find you out there on Twitter, Instagram, Threads, whatever it might be?
I just signed up for Threads. Thank you very much. And I have a group on Facebook of My Peacock Tale that's accessible. And I respond to emails through mypeacocktale@gmail.com. I'm out there, baby.
All right. And we'll have links to all that if you're listening to this live right now. Again, mypeacocktale.com. If you're hearing us after the fact, scroll down to the bottom of the page. Joey V will have those in the show notes. Shelley Herman, it's been a delight. I could probably have you here for another hour and a half and continue talking, but we want to save some secrets for the book so people get out there and buy it.
I appreciate that. And thank you so much for this. This was a lot of fun.
I'm glad you had fun. I had fun too. Like I said, it's such an amazing time. And just to be a part of it, I envy you. What an amazing story you've got there. And hopefully we can have you back on again.
That would be fun. Thank you, guys. And thanks to all the people that were responding to the chat, too. That was fun, too.
Yeah, we always love our listeners, and we're glad they're interacting with us as well. Shelley Herman, thank you again for your time on a Sunday night. Have a great rest of your week.
Be well.
You too. Thank you. There she goes. Again, My Peacock Tale, fascinating book if you want to check that out. And if you're anyone like Jim or Chance, you might want to go to the website, get that there. And of course, you can always ask your local bookstore to order it, because we always suggest you support your local bookshops as well. See if they can order it in for you. We're going to take another quick commercial break. Then we'll come back. We'll be joined by Howie Hirschfield talking about his improv show happening right across the hall at the Westport Playhouse. You can get tickets and come see it. You're listening to Geek to Me Radio on the Big 550 KTRS. Please stand by.
This is Kevin Conroy, the voice of Batman. You're listening to Geek to Me Radio.
I cannot tell you how happy it made me this morning to look up the Eisner Award winners out of SDCC and see that Kevin Conroy, our friend of the show, won an Eisner posthumously for his short story, Finding Batman, which I'm so grateful. I have that comic in my collection. Kevin signed it just before he passed. It was the last time I saw him. But to know he won that Eisner Award for that makes me blissfully happy. I'm sure it does all of you out there listening who were fans of the great Kevin Conroy, the definitive voice of Batman. But it's one of those things. We've had him on the show several times, and it still doesn't seem real. We'll put on Batman the Animated Series or Justice League, and man, I cannot believe Kevin Conroy is not with us anymore. But so glad, I'm so sure he's looking down, very happy that he won that Eisner Award for his story. Want to make sure we tell you about our premier sponsor, the City of St. Charles, the Greater St. Charles Convention and Visitors Bureau. Of course, the website, discoverstcharles.com. They just had their Christmas bingo ho-ho in July this past Friday. Sold-out crowd. Went really well. I hear the host was amazing. But they had a lot of people out there, brought their food, brought their fun, brought their A-game. They decorate the tables. They come dressed in Christmas costumes, and it was a really fun time. The 50-50 raffle got up to $531 that one lucky person took home that night. We had 10 rounds of bingo. Mrs. Claus called several of the rounds. It was just a really fun time. City of St. Charles always has something going on. We had that bingo night at the Foundry. They've got the Art of the Arcade, which you may have heard Jessica and Robert in here a couple weeks ago talking about that exhibit. That runs all the way through, I think, early September. So if you get a chance to get out to the Foundry, you can check that exhibit out, and you can see my personal addition to the collection of Rob the Robot from the original Nintendo. Always something going on in St. Charles. If you that's too much indoor stuff. Bingo and an indoor museum thing. Get outside, bike ride the Katy Trail, stop at the Bike Stop Cafe, has a nice vegan lunch, has some coffee, sit on one of the patios, the many patios that are out there, grab some barbecue from Salt and Smoke, get a burger from Burger Underground, restaurants up and down the street, lots of charming little shops. If you've not been out there lately, chances are there is a new restaurant or shop that you have yet to discover, which is why you should Discover St. Charles at discoverstcharles.com. That's the website. Always something fun going on. Once again, Discover St. Charles. We always say it's an historically good time. Speaking of good time, we've got my next guest is actor, comedian Howie Hirschfield talking about a brand new show he's going to be putting on right across the hall. For those of you who are watching, I'm pointing right across the hall. That's where Westport Plaza is at the Playhouse. You can come see his group perform live August 5th, I believe, is the show, yes?
Saturday night, August 5th.
And one show only.
It is one show only, yes. But that show will reverberate in people's minds for hours after the show's over. They'll still be thinking about it.
In a good way?
I don't know. I can't guarantee that. But
it's improv, you don't know.
Yeah, you know. And I have to tell the folks, I loved your interview with Miss Herman.
Thank you.
I mean, geez, the fact that the Tonight Show, King of Late Night, I offered to sleep with you to get on the show, and you said no.
No, I'm a man of principles. I
don't work that way.
Talent.
Okay, and a wise decision because, as my wife would say, never mind. Anyway,
it is past 9 o'clock. We could go there, but we won't.
Happy to be here.
Thank you,
James,
for coming in. No, this is great. Speaking of St. Charles, actually, that's where we met, is through the festivals out there and doing the shows and everything like that. And you've done improv for quite a while.
I have done improv since 1995.
Wow.
My first year as improv was City Improv down at Union Station when they still had a comedy club. The space is still there, but the only comedy is the rats that go through and pick at the stuff that's left. But Del Close, who may be familiar to some people who, the master of improv, one of the fathers of modern improv, did a workshop down there. Hmm. And I mean, as an improver, it doesn't get better than that. So that was quite a good, my first year, it's off and running. So.
Very cool. And how long have you been with the current group?
This is not quite right. We've done it 11 years.
Okay.
It started out with me and my daughter. who swore she didn't want to do improv, didn't do it in college. She said, well, I'll do it for you, Dad. I'll do it. 11 years later, she seems to enjoy it. So
it started out just a two-person act.
Two people. We had some other people in the show. Most of them got arrested after the first show for a variety of things that I had nothing to do with.
See, that's a reason to come see the August 5th show, folks. You don't know if people will get arrested on stage or not.
Well, I check them now. I do a lot more screening, so most of them have clean records.
Good, excellent. Yeah. And if so a lot of people are thinking, okay, what's improv? It's like, because some people think of immediately, whose line is it anyway?
And part of it is that. But if you've ever been to Westport Playhouse, and I know a lot of your listeners are around the country, but if you do come to St. Louis, come out to Westport Playhouse.
Yeah.
You can go see a show there. You can peer through the glass here and sometimes see you, and it's a safe distance.
Yeah, the glass will protect people out there from me
right.
and anything I can
And our say. Show, because Westport has a wonderful rear screen where you can project images and films, and we are doing that. We have a fake commercial we shot for it. David Kirkman, who directed the movie Underneath, which played here when he first released it. I'm in that film. And Gonzo, which is a short form kind of pilot for a podcast, an ongoing TV show. I'm in that too. He dropped a short film into it. We've got two sketches. We've got a newscast right in the middle of it, and then some improv games because we are, after all, an improvisation troupe.
So it sounds a little bit kind of like a Saturday Night Live type of thing where you've got the newscast and kind of a little bit kind of like that.
I love that analogy. Yes, yeah. That's right. Without the drugs, of course.
Right, and no guest host.
No guest host.
Right.
We are hosting our own stuff. And Lenny Mink, who works over there, sets us up, gets on the computer and runs all our tags and tag stuff. And it just looks great. It sounds great. And it's usually funny, which is a big plus.
that's an important thing. You usually probably want these to be funny.
We try.
You mentioned getting the audience because you get to play the improv games. And a lot of people go to these shows like they had Shakespeare, the Shakespeare drinking thing.
Yeah.
And people want to get picked. There's some people who want to come up. If someone's watching your show and they want to be one of the people who gets involved in this, what do you usually go off of, you and your group? What do you usually go off of as far as, well, let's pick this guy? Do you guys kind of judge beforehand? Is it completely random? Is there something someone can do to stand out?
It's usually random. Okay. My daughter's a high school teacher. She brought some of her kids to see the show, and one of them was having a birthday, so we picked him. But generally, it's random. It's not raise your hand and you'll get picked. We kind of look out. Like when we do murder mysteries, we basically know how to read a crowd and see somebody who wants to jump up. And again, as long as they don't have an ankle bracelet or parole officer sitting right next to them, sometimes you pick the parole officer.
Yeah.
Because he's funnier.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
He knows where the bodies are buried.
He won't tell us, of course, without a price.
And again, if you do want to get tickets, I've got the website is thewestportplayhouse.com. It's August 5th, so you still have plenty of time to get those tickets. With the improv shows, do you normally do them at Westport, or do you have them, do you play other places? Like, is it the same show?
This is always a different show because it's improv, and plus the things we do here, we can do here because of the screen and the rear projection.
Right.
But this is our second show here. And we also have done places like, throw a few plugs in. We've done the Heavy Anchor down there in South City. We have a few places we're kind of almost in demand. People would like us to come and do our stuff. And Lenny loves us, the guy who runs Westport.
That's helpful.
And so he came in tonight. I don't know why he came in tonight. He was out there, and I'm not sure he knew why he was here tonight. But he's very busy. He runs it. They've had a lot of shows here, and we're going to work with him. He's got all the stuff he needs from us to plug into the computer, and then we'll do the live stuff. And oh, my gosh, yeah. So
I know it's improv, but you mentioned you've got the projections, you've got everything like that. I know if you're doing a standard show, you've got tech week, you do brush up and everything like that. With it being improv, do you guys just come in a couple hours before, make sure everything fires and okay, we're good, or do you guys do a run through, even though it's improv?
Improv is discipline. So basically, we will rehearse. We won't, anything that comes out of during rehearsal, we won't do in the show because we'll forget. It's about teamwork. Stand by, it's yes and you may have heard that phrase where basically when you're on stage, it's usually two-person stuff, occasionally three, and whatever somebody says on stage, whatever it is, support them. You've got their back. I learned that from Dale, learned that from the great Ed Reggie, worked with him in improv over the years. It's just, and then it's basically just get comfortable with just letting what's in your brain come out. And that's why we don't cast people who don't, have much in their brains.
Right, which is why I've never been cast.
We sit there and wait, and it's a half hour, and it's like, it's quiet, and people think, is it supposed to be this quiet? And we go, no, it's
not. See, it's the same thing with radio. We don't like dead air. So that's an outdoor stand. I was just talking about that last hour.
That's right. So it's just something we practice to get in the habit of just releasing, being able to release the stuff. And good improvers just kind of, they don't think ahead of time. You don't want to be preparing. You get a suggestion, it's out of the blue.
Yeah.
And we do that. That's what we do in our games. And it's like, okay, go for it. And sometimes they go, well, I don't know. I said, sell it. Sell it. Make it up. If the audience thinks that you're struggling, they'll laugh along with you, and they love you even more.
And you mentioned Ed Reggie. Obviously, St. Louis has a lot of great performers like Ed Reggie. Mm-hmm. Bill Cott, who I know, Joey VC, he took a class from improv with Bill. So we've got a lot of those improv troops around here. With Not Quite Right, let's say the people who are listening right now, I'm like, I've got something going August 5th. Do you guys, do you know when your next show is? Do you guys have like another date coming up soon?
We don't have another date set for, well, we didn't after the last show here. And I just called Lenny and we set it up. We will probably be going around. We're also going to probably end up in St. Charles, probably at the Opera House.
Okay, that's a great
because
venue.
Greg right wants us to come and do a show there, and he just says, "You just let me know when you're ready." Plus, we'll also, you know, for the right price, we'll come to your house. So, yeah, just let
weddings,
us know.
Weddings, bar mitzvahs.
Or just, you know, a quiet night. We're not doing anything tonight, honey. I invited Not Quite Right over just to kind of liven things up. And, you know, she's wearing the lingerie, and it's like, but honey, too late.
Yeah,
sorry.
We've already invited them. I'm sorry.
They're coming. They're on their way.
Then she has to change into a different lingerie, probably.
Hopefully.
We'll see how that goes. Yeah. But again, so the website, what was the website, Joey? I'm sorry. Was it Not Quite Right? Facebook. Go to Facebook.com. Look up Not Quite Right Improv. You can check out the stuff that they have there. I assume there's videos and portions.
There are some clips from previous shows. Yeah. We've been down at every place from the Crack Fox to the Monocle, the non-alcoholic club in St. Charles.
I like to go to the alcoholic clubs. So talk to me about those, Howie.
That's right. Well, there's a parking lot right across from there.
Okay. Yeah.
And that's the alcoholic club. So basically, but the hours kind of fluctuate. So you really, it's when you have the bottle.
They're not very dependable.
And keep it in the bag because, you know, St. Charles.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
Open carry.
So, yeah.
Again, it's Facebook. There, Joey's got it up. Look at that. Facebook.com/NotQuiteRightImprov. Howie Hirschfield will be presenting. How many people total in the group as of right now?
Right now, I believe we've got six.
Six people?
It varies from 5 to 7. We've got some new people. Not new, really, because they worked with us before, and they kind of come in and out. But right now, it's Sarah Hirschfield. We have Mal Hudson. We have myself. We have Lucy Sappington. And Amy Crawford's returning to the great stage. Amy Crawford will be back. Well, she'll be in the audience. But she's been a member of our troupe for 6-7 years now, and hopefully back in our next show. And we'll probably be back here, probably in the fall, not during October, since that's going to be a pretty busy month for us.
Yeah, it should
be. Yeah. But
very cool.
We'll be back.
All right. So if you can't get them on August 5th, but we do recommend you try to make it, the WestportPlayhouse.com. The WestportPlayhouse.com is the place to get tickets for Not Quite Right Improv, as well as many of the other shows they've got going on over there. You'll be enchanted. The website's great. The Westport Playhouse website is fantastic. Quick plug for our neighbors right across the hall. There's no one there. Joey just turned and waved, but sadly, they're not there to wave back.
They're in spirit.
That's right. Yes. And they've got a cool... Anyway, I could go on. The lights, I'm easily distracted, so we'll try to stay focused. That's going to do it for the show. If people want to keep up with you, we mentioned the Facebook page, but are you very active on social media or anything like that? Are you?
Fairly. I'm on Facebook. And so you could look up Howie Hirschfield, spell it H-I-R-S-H-F-I-E-L-D. If you spell it one of the other ways, I think there's a coroner with a slightly different name. I think there's a guy who works in a butcher shop too, but you want me.
That's the same guy, the coroner in the butcher shop. I don't want to reveal that.
You weren't supposed to.
Yeah, it's really weird.
James.
Sorry. But Howie, I've worked with him before. He's a true professional and really talented guy. So if you're wanting to see this show, get the tickets, get out and see it. And I can guarantee you won't be disappointed. And if you are, bring it up with Howie. Don't bother me about it.
Come see me.
That's right. Howie Hirschfield, thanks for coming in tonight on a Sunday.
Thank you for having me, guys. Thank you, guys. Appreciate it, Joey. Thank you.
And that's going to wrap it up. We're at the end of the show here. I want to make sure we, again, thank Shelley Herman. That book, again, My Peacock Tale, Secrets of an NBC Page. We'll have a link to that in the show notes if you want to scroll down to the bottom of the page, and you can get that book as well. Thank our sponsors, Larry over at Bugs Comics and Games, and, of course, the Greater St. Charles Convention and Visitors Bureau. Make sure you get out and see both those places, get some comic books, and then go have lunch in St. Charles. What could be a better day than that? I will be out of town next week, but I'm not going to leave you with the best of, like some of these people here at the radio station. We're going to have a brand new show with the writer and just the stories this man told. It's Ron Friedman, who is basically responsible for the death of Optimus Prime. He wrote that Transformers movie from 1986, sorry. But he's worked on Hasbro lines of toys. He's done all sorts of stuff, and he will be my guest. He's got a great Orson Welles story, which I had to like keep muting my mic. I was laughing so hard. So that interview will be something you can look forward to next week while I'm in Connecticut at Terrific Con, and I'll have some great interviews coming from there as well. That's going to do it. Thanks, as always, to Joey B. Right across the control board from me. There he is, making the show look and sound as good as it does. Thank you to all of you who listened. We have Jim and Bill and Carol and Chance. And hopefully I got everybody who's in the chat today. I appreciate all of you. Until 2 weeks from now, my friends.
It's not in the way you play Mario Kart. It's not in the way you look when you make Game of Thrones references. That's a show. This is Geek to Me Radio. That's a show. This is Geek to Me Radio.
Thank you, Burbank. Good night.
Hey kids, are your parents about to buy you a shiny new toy from Amazon?
Hi, I'm Chucky. Wanna play?
Well, don't be selfish. Share some of that money with us. Before going on Amazon, make sure to type in bit.ly/geektome in the web browser. It will look just like Amazon.com, except it'll say referral Geek to Me Radio up top. And then when you check out, a tiny percentage will go to support the show without costing you 1 cent more. So before your parents get you that gizmo, gadget, or widget, make sure they type in bit.ly/geektome in the web browser.
bit.ly/geektome, bit.ly/geektome.